You are listening to TRC Unleashed.
They'll play action. The ball slips out of Barry's hands. It's picked up by DJ Swearinger on the blitz. He's at the 40, the 30, being trailed at the 15, 10. Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, DJ Swearinger.
That was Jungle Boy Swag, a.k.a. DJ Swearinger, leading us into episode 29 of TRC Unleashed.
Welcome. Free DJ.
What's a free DJ? Welcome, Gamecock Nation. I am your host, Buck, and I am joined by, as you have already heard, T-Bone and the G-Man. TRC Unleashed is a production of the Rubber Chickens blog, which can be found at therubberchickensblog.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. This is actually our second attempt at episode 29. Our first attempt was sabotaged by some technical difficulties, if you consider not recording incoming audio a difficulty, a technical difficulty. But it really wasn't a great show anyway, so you didn't miss anything, and we're going to try to make it up to you here. So, gentlemen, the interesting thing after our first show went to the big podcast in the sky on Sunday, I said, well, let's try it later this week. Maybe there'll be some news. And sure enough, we've had no shortage of news the last few days. So let's start with the biggest story of the week. I said that DJ led us into episode 29. One thing he will not be doing is leading us onto the field on Saturday. DJ Swearinger was suspended for a hit that he put on a UAB player. And, you know, guys, there are really two issues here that I think we need to talk about. Number one, the hit itself. And then the second issue is the way the SEC has handled the suspension. So if you go back to week one, very first game of the college football season, Andre Howell of Vanderbilt hit Justice Cunningham. Helmet flew off. Justice hung on to the ball and shook his dreads all over the place. And Hal of Vandy was flagged but not suspended. Last week, Trey Elston of Ole Miss hit a UTEP receiver. He was not flagged. Then he was suspended. And now DJ hits this guy. He was flagged and suspended, and there were a lot of people comparing the hit that he put on this guy to the one that Justice Cunningham took. So a little, you know, the big issue has been the inconsistency of the decision by the SEC. T-Bone, why don't you take it first?
Well, I mean, I think you've struck on it. We've kind of opened Pandora's box now, and there's a couple of reasons why it's a problem. The first is, you know, the logic of suspending the player who wasn't flagged. There's at least some logic to that, okay? It happened in the game. There has to be some type of punishment to discourage further action like that, so you suspend the guy. But when you can put it side by side with someone who was flagged, you know, and then not suspended, that's the lesson that we learn, right? The lesson that we learn is bad action, no flag, equals suspension. Right. Or bad action, flag, equals no suspension. Well, what they've done now is they've said bad action, flag, still suspension. So I really think this is now going to come up in every game. I mean, we're going to be watching every game, and anytime there's a personal foul penalty of any type, you know, a roughing the passer, a roughing the kicker, anything like that, we're going to be asking ourselves, is that guy going to get to play next week? And it's particularly troubling, and this is the second issue, because this was a non-conference game.
Right.
I don't know that the other conferences are taking this position. So when our guys run across the field, cut across the middle against Clemson, for example, just to pick a random example, are they going to be less likely or more likely to stretch their arms out and go after a ball? Or, you know, when Clemson's receivers go across the middle, are they going to feel confidence that the South Carolina guys can't come in there hard? And so I'm worried about that. It's not an NCAA rule. It's a conference rule, and we're apparently applying it in non-conference settings. So I'm kind of over my anger. I'm kind of over being a smart aleck about it, and I'm just starting to worry about, in a way, where are we going?
Right. And I didn't understand I didn't understand the SEC was doing this. I mean, was there any warning before the season started that, hey, we're going to be suspending people for these types of hits? It just kind of happened with the, Trey Elston first. Did I miss something?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I don't think so, but you have a thought on that?
No, I was just going to say there was some talk in the preseason about the SEC was going to put emphasis on this, but right. There was absolutely no education done on, a penalty scheme, something we could all follow with predictability. And that's part of the problem is this seems very ad hoc right now. What are they going to come up with next? Are they going to say, okay, you get a flag and you're ejected and you're out next week?
I think that they decided in the middle of, after the first few games to start doing it, because how can you suspend DJ for a game and not suspend the guy in the Vanderbilt game for at least a quarter or something? I mean, because I heard that you could apply this by a quarter, by a half, by a full game. And so they've deemed DJ's hit a full game suspension, but they deemed the Vanderbilt player's hit on Cunningham no sort of suspension whatsoever. And then they distinguish it by saying that there was some huge difference in the placement of the helmet or the shoulder or whatever, which I find just unbelievable. That they could make these little itty bitty distinctions based on their the actual placement of where the hit takes place. I mean, it's just so hard to understand and comprehend that to me. I mean, it doesn't seem fair. What I think the real answer is, they weren't prepared to suspend people at the time of the Vandy game, decided they were going to do it later, yet they don't want to go back and say, we made a mistake. That guy should have been suspended as well.
Yeah, and the other thing you've got factoring in here is that when the media starts, contemporaneously saying, okay, we may have this guy sitting out next week, then it puts the conference in a box, because if you were watching it the other night, they said, ooh, we may have a problem now. He may not, it was a question whether he was even going to be flagged there for a second. And then suddenly the commentators start talking about, well, we may have some problems next week.
Yeah.
That's a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point.
Whoever the SEC people are that are watching that game are like, oh, hey, maybe we need to talk about this. This might be a problem.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I knew the minute that he hit the guy, he was going to be suspended, because I knew that it had happened the week before. I was like, well, that got the ball rolling, and I'm sure that whoever – was it Ole Miss? Somebody, yep. I'm sure they were upset and raised hell about it to the SEC office. So the SEC's in going, well, we better be consistent about this. So, hence the Swearinger suspension. But I think the Vandy thing had already happened. Nobody complained about it. And, that guy just got off scot-free. But, here we are. But I think it's a very difficult thing. You could. What about later in the game when I think it was when Clifford was in the game? I don't know if you guys remember this, but he ran the zone read play and runs down the middle, and somebody hits him with a helmet, helmet to helmet. There wasn't even a flag on that play.
Knocked his helmet off.
Yeah. So what's the standard? What's the standard?
Yeah. Well,
you need to pick players, but what's
that,
the standard?
That kind of takes us into the other subject or the other part of this is, are these suspension worthy hits it's difficult because the NFL is addressing this, and they're addressing it full force with suspensions and fines. And I probably watch the NFL more than you guys do, but it's just about an every week thing, and they're trying to curb it because they've got a lot of financial investment in this, and they can't, these brain injuries, these guys killing themselves or being permanently, these guys that have been out of the league for a few years that have brain damage or whatever, they've got to protect their investment long term. And I tell you what, college, high school, middle school, down to these kids that I coach, it is trickling down big time. And this is where football is headed in the future. There's so much emphasis on this stuff right now. And I've coached, and I know I'm talking about Little League football, but this is where it starts. This is the third year I've coached, and I've never quite seen anything like what we've had to go through this year. I went through 3 hours of certification training, and at least 2 hours of that certification training was on tackling techniques, you know, what's right, what's wrong, and player safety. I mean, there's so much emphasis on player safety now. This is where football is going. Players are bigger. They're faster. The weight training and the speed training that they go through now is incredible. And hits like these, if you, you know, strip this of all the political aspect, the, you know, the SEC suspending this guy, not suspending this guy and all that, these are dangerous hits. I'm going to stop short of calling them dirty hits because I don't think they're dirty hits. I don't think they're – nobody's going out to try to injure anybody. At least I hope they're not. I don't think DJ was going out to injure this guy. He just saw an opportunity to lay a big hit on this guy, and he did it. And people are gonna get suspended. They're going to get fined. They're going to get whatever. And we're going to see a lot more of it from this point forward. And I think, you know, the SEC will probably be seen as the leader in this. Other conferences will follow. The NCAA will follow, whatever. But,
well,
you know.
Let me say this, though. You know, I mean, and this is going a little far afield from the topic. And I talked about blogging about this, but I haven't gotten around to talking to blogging about it yet. But, you know, this is a tricky, tough situation because the big hit, the big blow, the big excitement, I mean, that's what the public – wants. That's what we have been we grew up watching. I mean, for years, I mean, you look for the big hit from the safety coming in on the guy crossing over the middle. I mean, that's sort of been what football has been marketed as. I mean, that's what, you know, football is a tough man's game where people get tackled and people get nailed, and it's sort of like the Romans and the gladiators. I mean, and so now we're trying to dial it back, and the question I have is, can we dial it back?
Can you dial it back, and can you be consistent with it? Because, yep. And I think you're exactly right about that point, because if we're talking about safety, and safety is important, how do you distinguish the hit that UAB wideout took as opposed to the hit that, was it Reginald Bowens took on that return?
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
Where he just gets blindsided. That was a much more violent impact. I mean, I don't know how that kid, he had to go out of the game. He ended up coming back in and playing.
If you're going to,
differentiate that, not to mention the pile driving Connor Shaw into the ground. I mean, I understand a sack, but if we're going to talk about safety, let's talk about everybody's safety.
Right. And Spurrier addressed that at his press conference on Tuesday. And I really didn't think too much about it until I watched the replay the other night. He wraps Shaw up and just drives him into the ground. And that should have been a penalty. And Spurrier made a good point. He said that the NFL is protecting those quarterbacks. You want to talk about defenseless players, the quarterbacks are defenseless more than anybody on the field. And
not to get too ticky-tacky about it, but the flip side of that, the things that are getting called, you know, that was not a penalty. Neither of those plays. But they did call, was it 21? For running the quarterback out of bounds.
Oh, that was horrible. That was a horrible call.
Horrible call. And you know, how is that roughing the passer? You know?
Right, right. And it was after the interception had happened. But, yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing that they're sorting through. The people that love the game of football are sorting through this, the leagues, everybody is. But it's something that – the sport's changing. I mean, I get it. Football's a violent sport. Whoever said it's not a contact sport, it's a collision sport, was dead on. And broken bones and bruises and, you know, blown out knees and bad shoulders are going to be part of the game forever. And I think what they're trying to do is keep people from having their brains turned to mush, you know, basically. And another thing is the equipment. The equipment is so much better today. The helmets that these guys wear are just so they're fearless. I mean, they are really fearless when they go out there on the field. And so it'll be interesting to see where this goes, particularly where the SEC takes it. If we have any hits like that this weekend, and if anybody else gets suspended, unfortunately, we are the we're the team that's taken the biggest hit so far in losing DJ. So the other big news this week was Connor Shaw is going to get the start on Saturday. So, you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing over the fact that his bruised shoulder blade was actually cracked or broken, or I told you guys, I didn't even know that was something that could be broken. And a lot of people were saying, well, why did we even put him out there on Saturday? Why was he playing if we knew that? And then on Tuesday, you know, Spurrier came out like Moses and said that, yeah, Shaw's starting on Saturday. He's, you know, he's fine. He's 100%. You know, they said tonight he was 100%. But Spurrier act like, yeah, no big deal. What are you guys so bent out of shape about? How do you feel about Shaw starting for us on Saturday, G-Man?
I'm fine with it. I mean, I think we make far too much of not we, but the, you know, the greater we makes far too much of these weekly decisions or these, you know, coaches' decisions about, you know, who's going to play and who's going to start at left tackle and who's going to start at quarterback and can Connor Shaw play. I mean, he's going to start him. You know, this could be something he wants to say to get Missouri ready for two quarterbacks or for Connor Shaw. I mean, there's just been a huge debate here in Columbia about it on talk radio and in the paper. And, you know, is Spurrier, you know, jeopardizing his player, and is he hurt or can he be effective? But, you know, only Spurrier really knows, and Mangus and Shaw really know how hurt he is and can he play or can he not play. And, you know, I think that he could play two series and Dylan can play the rest of the game. You know, I just think that we need to let it play out. I mean, kind of like I said, when people went crazy about the performance of Dylan Thompson in the Vanderbilt game, just let it play out, see what happens. And, you know, I call me crazy, but I sort of trust the coaches on this, and I don't think that they would put him out there if he could not play. But, again, it could be just making sure that Missouri gets ready for everybody and giving them a lot to think about.
Yeah, well, I can assure you the coaches will give us something to bitch about before the weekend's out. we'll question some of their decisions, I'm sure, and one of them may be Connor Shaw and Dylan Thompson. T-Bone, you're a big Dylan Thompson man, aren't you?
I'm a big I don't have a clue man right now on this issue. You know, I vacillate between the position of saying, you know, rub some dirt on it. Head coach isn't worried. Quarterback's coach isn't worried about it. Connor isn't worried about it. And Connor's dad's even been quoted as saying he's not worried about it. So why are we all worried about it?
Yeah.
I go from that position to, you know, in a dark room huddled in a corner gripping my knees and crying. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Typically,
that's what I was saying.
Typically, whatever I think is going to happen, the complete opposite is going to happen. Because before the East Carolina game, I said Shaw is going to play. He's going to play from start to finish. He's going to take every snap, you know, unless there's a kneel down at the end of the game or something. And, you know, we know what happened there. He didn't play at all. And this week I said, you know what, Dylan Thompson's going to start against Missouri. He's going to probably play the whole game. We're going to rest Connor Shaw. And then Spurrier comes out. Ah, Shaw's fine. He's going to start. So usually whatever I say, just bank on the opposite is going to happen. So, you know, this Missouri game has got me, it's kind of got me down. I anytime anybody at work talks to me about it, all I can think about is the Auburn game last year. You know, that this the 3:30 Saturday game that could, you know, just kind of derail our season. You know, that the Auburn game didn't completely derail our season, but it was a big blow to what was a very special season, could have been, you know, an SEC championship type season. So their quarterback, James Franklin, has shoulder issues himself, had an inflamed bursa sac, which the shoulders have bursa sacs? Is that what?
I thought it was an elbow.
Is it an elbow? Is a bursa sac in an elbow?
It's absolutely not in the elbow.
Okay. Well, you're the one. Give us the
elbow problem.
T-Bone, give us the shoulder breakdown again. You had that kind of down when in the podcast that got the Lost podcast.
Yeah, I've done a great deal of research on WebMD when I was supposed to be working the past couple of weeks, and the bursa sac is actually it's not a sac per se. It's an area that should be covered in lubricating fluid. And if it becomes inflamed, it causes a great deal of pain.
That sounds like a sack to me.
Basically, touch the outside of your shoulder, the tips of your shoulders. That's where the bursa sac is. Connor's injury is on the back of the shoulder. This is fascinating information. I know.
Yeah, this is good. I can edit this part out.
On the blog this week that if you know the Battle of the Columbia's trophy didn't work out, we should just have the shoulder bowl and go with that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm pretty sure that Franklin will be starting, and he'll play most of the game, which means he won't, because what I just said, the opposite normally happens. TJ Gurley will be filling in for Swearinger, so we'll have a true freshman at safety. And I just read before we recorded this that Bryson Williams will be calling the defensive signals. So we'll see how that works out for us. G-Man, you got a feel for the game on Saturday?
You mean as far as a score or what, or just how I think it's going to go?
How you think it's going to go?
I think that everything we've seen so far in our young season has been Spurrier sort of feeling his way, kind of seeing what he's got. He did what he had to do to win the Vanderbilt game after Shaw got hurt. The next two games, I think he's been playing with the passing game to try to see who his receivers are, figure out his go-to guys, and get ready for the real season, which starts on Saturday. And I think on Saturday, what you're going to see is we're going to revert back to more of what we did last year. I think there's a reason why Marcus Lattimore carried the ball 12 times on Saturday. I think you're going to see us get back to our formula from late last season, which is a lot of Connor Shaw. If he's able to run the zone read, a lot of Marcus Lattimore, I think you're going to see us more in the I formation some. And if you got to give the ball to Marcus 35 times to win a game, I think that's what you're going to see. Some play action. I don't think you're going to see us throwing the ball 35 times all over the field. I think this is going to be Spurrier trying to control the clock, let our defense take care of Missouri, and win the game in the fourth quarter. As far as a score, I'm going to say somewhere in the 24-17 range for the good guys.
How about you, T-Bone?
Well, I would agree with a lot of what Seabass has said there, G-Man and his alternate nickname Seabass, which we need to reintroduce. I would agree with a lot of that. But I do think that we're going to see Lattimore in the upper 20s or low 30s on carries. I just think that's, that's what we've been doing. We hadn't been burning him out at the beginning of the year for a reason. And so we'll see a lot of that. I would like to see us running out of the eye a lot. Just because, I'm still a little sensitive about Shaw. I'm more interested in, and I think the story of the game is going to be, can we slow them down with our defense? I don't think we're going to put up a bunch of points. I think, as Seabass says, we've got probably about 24, 28 in us any given Saturday. And so that the question in my mind is, can we hold them down? Can we stiffen in the red zone like we've been doing, or has that been just kind of an aberration? So I think in the end we probably can. I think we'll probably go into the half down by, a score, something like 14-10 down at the half, and then we'll end up pulling away at the end, winning by more than a touchdown, but not, not a blowout by any stretch. So I think something like a 28-13 game, 28-17 game, something. That feels kind of right to me.
Well, good. I hope you guys are right, because then we go to Kentucky and then the showdown with Georgia on October 6th. I'm going to go ahead and call it for Missouri 35-14, somewhere in that range.
Good Lord. You're doing the whole opposite thing, aren't
I'm
you?
I'm doing the bizarre, right. The bizarre of hoping that we'll actually be the ones coming out on top by 3 touchdowns. So, all right, well that'll do it for the Gamecocks. Let's talk a little bit about our friends from the Upstate.
This week in Dabo.
Well, Dabo was really quiet for a while there. And this has been a pretty exciting week. Number one, the top 10 ranked Tigers are headed down to Tallahassee to play the number four ranked Florida State Seminoles in prime time on Saturday night. But before that, Dabo got into a little legal issue. And T-Bone, you're familiar with this. I'm going to let you kind of tell us how this played out.
There is in Pickens a buy-low grocery store, and as we know, those of us on the podcast and those of you out there listening may know about marketing, that one of the best things you can do is to take your business to where your customers are. And because of that, Dabo Swinney does his call-in show from a buy-low in Pickens occasionally, and it's a very well-attended event by the single-tooth set here locally. And so what had happened is Dabo was apparently busy. I don't know whether he was arranging another practice baptism or what, but he was late arriving at the Bilo in Pickens. And it's a pretty big parking lot, surprisingly paved for this part of the country. But he had...
So paving is something new to the upstate of South Carolina?
That much paving in one place is kind of a big deal. But he had arrived, and apparently his brother was driving him, or his brother was with him. And they were doing, I think, 63 and a 35, which is, you know, a little bit fast.
Right.
Also known as a six-point violation if you're in the business. That's half the points you have on your license in South Carolina. So it's not a small thing. You can get a $400 fine for that. $440.
Right.
The police officer pulled him over and in the parking lot, and they got out of their cars and laughed and waved at the police officers and tried to run up and start signing autographs in order to avoid the ticket, apparently. But they were disturbed to find that no one in Pickens in the Bilo has pen or paper ever. That's there would be no reason for them to carry those implements. But
right.
So the signing autographs thing didn't work too well. But apparently it got testy between the officer and Dabo and his brother, particularly the brother. Complaints were lodged. Promises were made in the nature of, you know, don't you realize we'll never pay this ticket? This will never, you know, you're just creating problems for yourself. And as I understand it lately, and I don't know this firsthand, but I understand that most recent news is perhaps that officer has been terminated.
Right. That is what Fitz News is reporting as of this afternoon.
Well, I don't actually trust Fitz News on any of it, but I do know the first part of the story from not participants, but supervisors of participants in this entire process.
Right, because you don't deal with the participants; you deal with the supervisors. You're at a higher level than.
Okay, the truth has to come out. I spent the night in jail, and they told me this story. But.
Right. Well, that's interesting. So, so Dabo gets a non-speeding ticket, I guess. I wonder if that ever got paid or resolved. But you know, a little brouhaha. Maybe Dabo was thinking he was above the law, or at least his brother. But then the article comes out. Who wrote that puff piece on Dabo? Was that on CBS Sportsline or something like that?
Yeah, I think
talks about everything that Dabo has overcome and goes into the whole living with his mom in college and sleeping in the same bed thing. And
so creepy.
Yeah. And man, was it Bubba Prague, Timothy Burke, actually put it out there as something positive?
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you this, that if people were constantly publishing a story about me spending my college years sleeping with my mom, I'd need to maybe baptize myself at practice, too.
Yeah, well, this Timothy Burke on Twitter is the most cynical, sarcastic, always pointing out the faults of everybody else, which is why we love his Twitter feed. And he actually put this article out there as, man, you got to read this. This is a great story, which is, disturbing in and of itself that he would. But so Dabo, he gets a lot of positive press. So we'll see. Hopefully they just get their brains beat in down in Tallahassee this weekend, so we don't have to hear from them for at least a couple of weeks until they beat Wake Forest and start feeling good about themselves again. So, G-Man, does Dabo get any play in the Midlands for stuff like this? Had you heard the story about his being ticketed?
I'd heard about it, but it's not really big news around here.
You're too busy dealing with Ron Morris.
Yeah, Ron was, now that he no longer has the affection of the head ball coach, of course, Ron is back to his old ways of being contrary and bashing just about everything that USC does, including just railing on Spurrier this week for playing Connor Shaw last week. Typical Ron Morris stuff. But no, not a lot of Dabo news. I mean, I did know about the story, but most people around here are just hoping and praying that FSU takes care of business on Saturday night.
Well, while FSU is taking care of business, I'll be at the New Edition concert at Chastain Park.
Woo!
Cannot wait for that.
No comment there. I don't think you want to hear what we might have to say about that.
I have talked everybody into leaving a little later than so I may actually be around for the end of the South Carolina Missouri game. I'm hoping that I can feel comfortable leaving, leaving that game if I have to. Hopefully we'll have a big lead, but anyway, big game this weekend, so looking forward to seeing the Gamecocks pull one out. You guys got any final words before we sign off? Do you guys have any crickets in your pockets? So at least make some noise.
I think that's about it. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere. I expect it to be a huge crowd, raucous crowd, and the video board will be on full display. That's gotten a little bit of criticism around town, but no, I think it's going to be a great atmosphere. And Missouri rolling into their first away game in the SEC, I think that's pretty significant. Something we haven't talked about, but it ought to be a great one.
So speaking of the video board, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to throw this out there to all our listeners that have hung around for all 35 minutes of this crap that we're putting out on the air. The Beast Board. Everybody has gotten to call the video board at the stadium the Beast Board. I'm going to put this out there to the listeners. T-Bone called the video board Beast Board in a tweet on August the 9th. And we feel like that was probably the first time publicly anyone had called it the Beast Board, and it's kind of taken off from there. So, we understand there's nothing in it for us monetarily. We just want T-Bone to get the credit for naming the Beast Board. So if you have any evidence that somebody called it Beast Board prior to August the 9th, we'd love for you to send it to us.
I'm not one to try to take credit for things, so I'll have it. The record reflect that Buck is trying to get me credit on this, but
right.
What he's not telling you is that we called it Beast Board probably on a podcast earlier than that, but that would take way more research than we're prepared to do at this point.
Right.
The other thing that we may not be getting credit for is Gamecocks Online now releases something called What Channel Is the Game On each
right.
week, and I think this is directly related to our continued hazing of Andy Demetra, where we constantly via Twitter every time he starts on some of his pre-rehearsed nonsense that he does,
right.
we just ask him what channel's the game on this week, and I think we've had impact in that way too.
Yeah, I need to do. Isn't there a video, and G-Man, you've been to both of the home games? A video they play about Williams-Brice Stadium is kind of like the stadium's talking to you.
There's something like
that. In the
that.
Pregame video. I see, I think.
Like there's a sort of a historical video, if that's what you're talking about, where they show a lot of past plays and events, and there is some sort of audio like that coming out.
It's like the stadium's talking to, I'm made of concrete and steel. And,
right, you know, that
kind of thing. Yeah, I think Demetra wrote that too. So that's why it's...
It figures.
That's why it's horrible. All right. All right, that's enough of that nonsense. So, you know, before we sign off, we will remind you, all Gamecock fans, it has now been 1,396 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. And today, September the 20th, the day that we're recording, is also the second anniversary of the death of Gamecock great Kenny McKinley. So here's to you, number 11. Rest in peace, my friend. I am Buck for the Rubber Chickens blog, therubberchickensblog.com. We'll talk to you soon.